and welcome to the Love Meech Podcast. I'm your host, Meech. It is a billion podcasts to listen to, and the universe guided you right here to this one. So hello, welcome, welcome. There are 7.9 billion people in the world today, yet you met me, and this is not by happy chance. This is divine meeting, and may we guide each other well. Now, I am in this world, but I am not of it. On this podcast, you're going to hear topics about both the spiritual world as well as the earth world. My goal is to keep learning and evolving and spreading love. Hey loves, y'all ready for part two? All right, so now I'm gonna start to talk about Jacksonville, and it's gonna trickle down into like everything, so stay with me. So I'm gonna start out with this is from Wikipedia. Jacksonville is a city located on the Atlantic coast of Northeast Florida, the most populous city proper in the state. And it's the largest city by area in the contiguous United States as of 2020. Okay, it goes on to say, with a population of 1,732,33,937, the Jacksonville metropolitan area ranks as Florida's fourth largest metropolitan region. So for all my business owners out there, there are over a billion people. So make that money, 1,733,937. What? That is a lot. I did not know that. That is insane, y'all. Okay, so let me keep going. Then it goes to talk about the area code of 904. So we go by 904 here. I just want to flip over and give you an interesting fact about 904. Okay, so it says, the entire state of Florida was originally assigned 305 in 1947, but due to growth in 1965, it was given the area code 904. Then it goes on to say that in May of 2022, a new 324 area code was approved to serve the same boundaries as the 904 area code beginning February 26, 2024. So they approved a new area code in 324. It's not going to go into effect until February 26, 2024. So we're going to start seeing 904 and 324 when people call. I thought that was pretty interesting. Okay, let me go back to Jacksonville. History. So the area of the modern city of Jacksonville has been inhabited for thousands of years. So this to me proves that before anyone got here, they knew there was natives. Okay, so it goes on to say, on Black Hammock Island in the National Timucan Ecological and Historical Preserve, a University of North Florida team discovered some of the oldest remnants of pottery in the United States dating to 2500 BCE. What stuck out to me? Some of the oldest remnants? Okay. Let me go on. It talks about St. Augustine. Let's see. Let me keep going. American Revolutionary War. Oh, this stood out to me too. May 3rd, 1901, downtown Jacksonville was ravaged by a fire that started as a kitchen fire. I call BS. I just found out that, and I'm ashamed to say that Tulsa, Oklahoma was not the only all-Black thriving community. They were all over. They either bombed them, burned them, or flooded them. Now that I'm knowing this history, the flood in Louisiana, I don't think that was no hurricane. I don't think that was no flood. People did say they heard bombs. It's starting to ring a bell. This fire, I don't think it was no kitchen fire. Downtown was predominantly Black. They were thriving. And just like they did everyone else, they wanted to stop it, start it over. It's like the more I learn, stuff just don't sit right with me. Just because someone tells you this is history, it's like, no. Something in the milk ain't clean. A kitchen fire? Really? Okay, so let's see. In 8 hours, it swept through. You mean to tell me a firefighter squad couldn't control this fire? They let it burn on purpose. And I remember my grandma talking about this. For 8 hours, it swept through 146 city blocks, destroying over 2,000 buildings, leaving 10,000 homeless, and killed 7 residents. How can a fire that big, 146 blocks, and it only killed 7 people? If it was a legit fire, people wouldn't have been warned. It would have been caught off guard. It would have, a lot more people would have died. Think of like a bomb. Like, it's no warning, just boom, death. But if this is planned, like, come on. You have enough time to tell people to leave and let the shit continue to burn. I'm just saying. So they call it the Great Fire of 1901. Now, my grandma was a Black Panther, and I'm sure they was running it here, too. But they shut it down. Let me continue to go here. Because that might be it for Jacksonville. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, demographic, cultures, education. Yeah, that's it for Jacksonville. Okay, so let me exit out of here. So then I go to look at downtown Jacksonville. Downtown Jacksonville is a historic core and center, a central business district, CBD, for Jacksonville, Florida. It comprises the earliest area of the city to be developed and is located in a geographical center along the narrowing point of the St. Johns River. So prime real estate is along the river. Of course, we're going to do whatever we need to do to burn, say it's a storm, whatever, so that we can buy up this land because it's prime real estate. Like, whatever. They're not fooling me. So let's talk about the origins. The site of the modern downtown Jacksonville originated as a crossing point at the St. Johns River known to the Seminole as Waka Palatka. This is my dilemma with history. You're telling me from your point of view, Jacksonville originated and it was known by the Seminoles. No, I don't care what your history says. Let's pull the Seminoles in and tell us what Jacksonville originated as. That's where history should start. Why aren't we hearing the other sides of history? We're only hearing his story. Okay, the Seminoles should be the first one to give us the history, and then they should come and tell us where they came in to play. But nobody wants to talk about that. Let's see. So this is the part where I start to dig. The settlement that became Jacksonville largely formed two large grants issued in 1816, one to Maria Taylor and one to Juan Lemaitre. Over time, a small settlement, including some homes and inn, a store grew at Calford. And in 1822, shortly after, Spain ceded the Floridians to the United States. Resident Isaiah D. Hart proposed establishing a town on the north bank. Hart essentially convinced his neighbors to join him in donating land for the venture, and the first streets were planted in June. The settlement was named Jacksonville after Andrew Jackson, who had become popular among many Floridians for his actions in the First Seminole War. It was incorporated in 1832. I have Native Americans in my family. This does not sit well with me. So you mean to tell me Native inhabitants of a land had to fight for something that was rightfully theirs? This is our history. And it's sick. It is so twisted and sick. And I don't want to learn this at this point. I don't. I went to the library. If you are here in Jacksonville, Florida, the local libraries do a book drive. Okay, so then I go over to Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson, born March 15, 1767 through June 8, 1847, was an American lawyer, planter, general, and statesman who served as the 7th President of the United States from 1829 to 1837. Before being elected to the presidency, he gained fame as a general in the United States Army and served in both houses of the U.S. Congress. Although often praised as an advocate to ordinary Americans and for his work in preserving the Union of the States, Jackson has also been criticized for his racial policies, particularly his treatment of Native Americans. Now, remember, I have ties with Native Americans and African. My heart, my soul, my everything, it bleeds, pumps, gets angry. It's all in those cultures. So what I dug into a little bit with Mr. Jackson this right here. Jackson ran again in 1828, defeating Adams in a landslide. In 1830, he signed the Indian Removal Act. This act, which has been described as an ethnic cleansing, displaced tens of thousands of Native Americans from their ancestral homelands east of the Mississippi and resulted in thousands of deaths. Under Jackson, the integrity of the Federal Union was challenged when South Carolina threatened to nullify a high protective tariff set by the federal government. He threatened the use of the military to force and enforce the tariff, but the crisis was defused when it was amended. So bump all of that. How can they politely state that he signed an Indian Removal Act? That might as well be a Holocaust. An ethnic cleansing. What do you mean ethnic cleanse? These are these people's homelands. How do you come and cleanse anything? If anything, they need to be cleansed from you. You shouldn't be there, and you should go back whence you came from. And it displaced thousands of Native Americans from their homeland. So that's our root. One thing about Native Americans, they believe everything is alive. The wind, the sky, the trees, the dirt. Everything has life force entity. Everything has God in it. They're so sacred. So sacred. And you move them from their homeland. When you move people, you're not just moving them from lands. You're uprooting traditions. You're killing. Some of them didn't make it there. So if a lot of the elders died, that's a lot of your history too. You only can know what the oldest generation is able to foretell you. So just uprooting them alone, God, it was brilliant. They knew exactly what they were doing. So anyway, so I stopped there. I didn't care to learn anything else about him, his legacy, or his career. I moved from here to the Indian Removal Act. So let me switch over to there. So, Indian Removal Act. The Indian Removal Act was signed into law on May 28, 1830 by United States President Andrew Jackson. The law, as described by Congress, provided for exchange of lands with the Indians residing in any of the states or territories and for the removal west of the Mississippi River. More than 60,000 Indians from at least 18 tribes were forced. Do you see how they politely say things? I remember I was in sixth grade, and my grandma and my uncle used to make us look at PBS slave movies all the time. And I get to school and they have one freaking paragraph saying the Africans were brought to America to help farm. And I'm like, this is not true. You see how they try to pretty their monstrous acts? So here they're saying we're forced to move. No, they fought for their life. There were over three wars. They fought. They did not want to leave. What do you mean forced to move? They did not want to move. They fought. They fought. They fought. They fought. They fought. And they continue to lose people. And what do you do when your numbers keep going down? You have no choice but to leave to live. You don't just say, this is my land. That's like you having a home paid for. You only doing taxes. And someone's like, leave. Would you literally just leave because they told you to leave? No. It's going to take everything in you, down to your soul, your life, to leave. So anyways, 60,000 Indians. I believe that's false. I believe that's false. The number is higher than that. At least 18 tribes. That's all they knew. I'm sure it was more than 18 tribes. So the southern tribes were resettled in Oklahoma. The northern tribes were resettled in Kansas. So my sister-in-law, her people are from Kansas. Now, let's be honest. Native Americans were farmers. Okay, we're going to be living southern. We're not, if we move, it's going to be like moving and hunting with the animals. We might the men maybe may follow the herd, the animal, whatever, buffalo, to hunt and bring the food back home. I'm sure the women stay stable. No one wants to live in the cold. I believe that's what that whole moving and stuff was. I honestly feel like there's different races of people. You might as well call us aliens because our DNA is not the same. A lot of people can trace their heritage back to islands, southern places, warm places. I feel like one particular species may have come from coal. And I can only imagine if all I knew was coal, we probably eating each other. Nothing's growing. Of course, there's fish and stuff like that, but that's a harsh life. Yeah, I would want to search and find a warm place. And yeah, I would want to fight and make them move. Because who wants to go back to the snow? Like, I can see both sides of that. But there was still a better way. They could have coexisted. Why do you take someone's land? Why not ask if you could just cohabitate? You literally took their land and told them to leave. But anyways, that's just my story. I'm sticking to it. I honestly feel like beyond these ice walls are other continents that nobody wants to talk about. And for whatever reason, a species came from across them ice walls, hit the jackpot, and like taken over. Because Earth and all of our people, if you look at the natives, the Africans, we were all living peacefully until history start to talk about that particular group raging war on all continents. And instead of us realizing we have one common enemy, we're fighting each other. It still blows my mind today. But anyways, let's see. So when my sister-in-law said her people are from Kansas, no, they're not. Her people were natives. They definitely were here and they were forced to leave. And we're going to talk about the Trail of Tears too. So the northern tribes were resettled initially in Kansas, with a few exceptions. The United States east of Mississippi and south of the Great Lakes were emptied of its Indian population, Hal and the Hale. The movement westward of the Indian tribes was characterized by a large number of deaths. See how pretty they paint this? A large number of deaths occasioned by the hardships of the journey. Ain't no by the hardships of the journey, by the hardships of people coming to their land, giving them freaking diseases that they don't know about, introducing barbaric ways of living, chains and guns and stuff. We up here making bow and arrow and axes. Y'all coming over here with steel. You're going to win every day with that trickery. And from what I learned, one of the gods introduced steel to them. So what demon did they pray to get steel? Because that's not, we weren't elevated that far yet. We were still using rocks and arrows and, you know, homemade stuff. So you just come out the blue with this electrical stuff. Okay, you know, who did you pray to? What entity did you side with to help you win and take over? But anyways, so I feel like her people are Native American and she's very bright. So I feel like Native Americans was all colors. But of course, there may have been rape in there because you get lighter when you start to mix. Or each time you mix, put it that way. Let me keep going. The U.S. Congress approved the act by a narrow majority in the House of Representatives. And this is why I don't vote today. This same government that thought it was okay to the Indian Removal Act, that is in your history books. And you are fighting for whatever else they come up with? Absolutely not. This is the same government that gave out IDs to hunt African Americans. And you could bring them back dead or alive. Same ID that we have today. Instead of it saying you have permission to hunt, it's different alphabets on there. I have so many licenses. You can be an investigative reporter. You could do security. You could have a driver's license. You know, there's so many FBI, CIA. I had one at IRS. All these licenses tell you what right you're supposed to have. I have all the rights in the world because God gave them to me the moment he breathed life into me. I don't need you to give me some card to tell me that I have specific power when I have all power within my imagination, my emotions, and my will. Period. That's what they don't want us to know. That's why they have us on this social media and all this stuff, because we are not in tune with our mind anymore. One thing I'm gonna do this year, I'm gonna be meditating a lot. Yoga and meditation is on my to-do list. The stronger your mind is, the more magnetized things will come to you. You literally can speak stuff and it will be. And the stronger you get at that, the faster that stuff will come. But anyways, So the U.S. Congress approved the act by narrow majority of the House. You'll never see me vote ever. The Indian Removal Act was supported, and I did, but I just don't believe in the whole system at all. Just away with the whole system. I want to be a sovereign citizen. I can govern myself. Just me, God, and nature. Like, no. The Indian Removal Act was supported by President Johnson, Southern and white settlers, and several state governors, especially that of Georgia. Indian tribes, the Whig Party, and many American opposed the bill. They just didn't win, y'all. But I don't hate everyone, because it says that they won by a narrow majority. So that means a lot of people was against it. But all the people that were, it seems to be the ones that are running it today. So let me keep going. Legal efforts to allow Indian tribes to remain on their land in the eastern U.S. failed. I wonder how. How can legal efforts fail? Because they're still failing today. You could definitely body somebody and be free, and ain't nothing no one can do about it. Do you have the money? Do you have the right legal team? Freedom is guaranteed. And again, that's why I don't believe in the system, because how is that fair? How is that legal, just, or fair? And sometimes it doesn't make sense. This woman was in a domestic situation relationship here in Jacksonville, Florida. She shot a gun in the air like a warning to get this guy to leave, and she's in jail. No one is reprimanding him for being abusive. She's the one that's going to jail. I don't agree with a system like that, and I won't vote for a system like that until they fix it. Another situation, a young teen, and my heart goes out to kids. Lord, please. One day I'm going to have a house full of orphans. What do you call them? I don't know, like foster care. It's going to be something. But this, I remember looking at Teen Mom, and on one of the episodes, this old couple, and they were old as hell, had fostered over 100 kids. And I was thinking, out of all the stuff that we aspire to do in life, make money, have our own family, yada, 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 they impacted over 100 people's lives. Now, check this out. Those 100 people are going to get married and have kids. That number grew. And those kids are going to have kids. That number grew. And those kids are going to have... Do you see the impact? That's why I think we should be focused on the impact that you leave behind, more so than the money that you make. But I got to get things in line to be able to do that. But it's coming. So let me get back to this, because we're about to go to the Trail of Tears. Oh, so this is where I was going with that. So a young woman in foster care killed someone that raped her. Now, it's only one way to look at it. Pardon me if I'm wrong. She should be free. How do you go to jail? And she's ran away, and they found her and everything, trying to fight for her life. How do you go to jail for defending yourself? If you kill someone that was trying to rape you, there's only one solution. That was self-defense. Number one, let's reprimand whoever was in her care. How is an adult along with her to even attempt to rape her? Like, let's start there. The parents and the predator need to be going to jail. She should be seeking therapy for the rest of her life and free. She's not a murderer per se, because she killed her rapist. They want to say all murder is bad. No, it's not. I usually ask, what happened? Okay. Because you cannot sit here and say, if it's my life or yours, you just gonna die. Absolutely not. We all going to fight for the end, and we're going to want to win and survive, whether the other person die or not. That's just survival instinct. But you mean to tell me that baby sat on the stand and said she killed her rapist and she's going to jail? F this whole system. I don't care. Okay, so Indian Removal Act continued. So it says legal efforts to allow Indian tribes to remain on their land in the eastern U.S. failed. Because it's a failed system. Okay. I think the biggest joke is law is supposed to mean justice, but it's really flipped upside down. Anything illegal, dangerous, harmful that you want to do, you're supported by different laws and stuff. And anything justice that you want to do, it's against you. Lady fired a warning shot so this man could go and she could protect herself and her family. She's in jail. A woman defended herself and killed her rapist, and she's in jail. That is not a justice system. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. What has happened is we rule as men now. Real rulers and leaders are led by spirit. God. God cares about us all. And sometimes, you know, God will tell you to do things that you don't want to do. Pay for that lady meal behind you. Call that person and see how they're doing. Pay that person's bill. Check up on that person. Help this person do that. You don't even want to do it. Because we're men. But we're spirit led. And I feel like this system is, as much as they want to claim Christians, absolutely not. I see Satanism everywhere. I see Satan worship everywhere. This might as well be Sodom and Gomorrah. And this is coming from a wild child. Like, it's getting out of hand. But yeah, I think wise people are more spiritual. If I'm going to follow any leader, it needs to be someone of spirit. Because you may want to do things your way, but spirit will guide you to do them the most beneficial for all parties involved. That is someone that I can stand behind. And I may, you know, fight tooth and nail with them, but spirit, never. You got it. I already know. You got it. It is what it is, and so it is so. You know, your ways are higher than my ways. So let me keep going. So yeah, legal efforts failed. I bet they did. Most famously, the Cherokee, excluding the Treaty Party, challenged their relocation, but were unsuccessful in the courts. They were forcibly removed by the United States government in a march to the West that later became known as the Trail of Tears. Now, they could have described that a lot more. That was a very vague sentence. Oh, they were forced to leave with the Trail of Tears. Nah, baby, break that down. And I am. Let me read a little bit more here, and then I'll go. Because a lot of us think we're African. Baby, you have Native American roots. You're probably African and Native Americans because, truth be told, all islanders were trading and bartering. You mean tell me if you fell in love with someone from another island, you wouldn't go marry them and interbreed? Oh, okay. So we were already interbreeding African, Natives, Chinese, whatever. But this one race, where the heck did they come from? Because once they entered the scene, everything went to hell. Okay? Let me see. And it's not even a race thing. It's a heart. There are people of heart and spirit. And there are people that, well, I don't know, what are they? AI robot? Heartless? Soulless? Who are you? How can you be on a jury, or how can you be a judge and sentence that baby to jail and someone raped her? That, you have no heart. Anyways, let me keep going. So let me just read some of these clans. We have Cherokee, Choctaw, Sequoia. It's so interesting. My sister, growing up, it was this girl named Sequoia. My older sister was friends with her. Still know her to this day. She just told me she had bumped into her in a store. Sequoia is a Native name, y'all. So we even be using these names and don't even know where our roots come from. Just so unattached. Let's see here. Chickasaw, Choctaw, Musco, Creek, Seminole. I'm trying to give you some of these names. Anyways, I'm going to wrap this up and we're going to move on to the Trail of Tears. So this is the last part. The Removal Act paved the way for forced explosion of tens of thousands of American Indians from their land into the West. In an event widely known as the Trail of Tears, a forced resettlement of the Indian population. I don't think it was just a resettlement. Just like they say, they brought us here to help them farm. This was not no resettlement. They fought. They lost a lot of people in battle. Then once they lost, you didn't even make them prisoners of war. You told them to freaking pack this and go. Really? To cold lands that they don't know anything about? How do you even just, how do you send somebody to Antarctica and say, figure it out? You don't have no survival skills. That's death already. May the strongest survive. But anyways, I just hate how they word stuff. A resettlement, my ass. Okay, so the first removal treaty, and then it's different names. The Treaty of the Dancing Rabbit Creek. Again, they told them to leave. The Treaty of New Ekata. Again, they told them to leave. Ain't no darn treaties. Y'all force these people to leave. This is a government that I do not. No. It's evil. The Seminoles and other tribes did not leave peacefully. I know that's my tribe. And they resisted the removal along with fugitive slaves. Hello, because we fighters. The Second Seminole War lasted from 1835 to 1842 and resulted in the government allowing. Look at this, allowing them to remain in South Florida swampland. No, what it was, these Seminoles was bad as hell. These fugitive slaves was bad as hell. They couldn't win. They couldn't tell us to leave. That's how bad. That's the history I want to read. Because you see it ain't here. They gave me this one sentence. They allowed them to stay. No, y'all lost. Y'all kept losing soldiers. I bet it was some voodoo and a whole bunch of stuff going on. And y'all left them the fuck alone. That's what really happened. That's what Spirit's telling me. But we don't get to hear that story. We just get one sentence. They were allowed to stay. So explain yourself. You forced tens of thousands to leave, but you just allow a certain few to stay. BS. You either allow them all to stay or tell them all to go. And if something don't go according to plan, it is what it is. And that's what happened here. Y'all could not conquer them darn Seminoles. And this is why I think things are a joke. It's like we celebrate Martin Luther King, but y'all assassinated this man. So yeah, we may be parading. He had a dream. Look what he did. But you have another group that's celebrating the fact that they killed that man. Two things can be true at the same time. You know that, right? And I think a lot of the stuff that we celebrate is a laugh in our face. We're celebrating one thing when they literally commemorated it for another. Literally. So we have a football team called the Seminoles. Because what, y'all conquered them? What, because y'all stole their land? If you can acknowledge who they are, then you should be able to acknowledge what you did. You should be able to acknowledge a wrong. Why is that not okay? Right the wrong. And that would mean giving them their land and leaving, by the way. So allowing them to stay in the Florida swampland. Only a small number remained. Around 3,000 were removed in war. Ain't no small number. A lot of them stayed. Okay? I'm going to tell you that. And they only... This was a real story. They only were able to get 3,000 to leave. The rest of them was so bad and powerful and strong, they stayed. And they didn't have no choice but to stay. And they weren't going to keep fighting them and keep dying and losing. So that was part two of the American removal. Now we're going to go to the Trail of Tears. Okay, so Trail of Tears. See, this one ain't no teacher. But this is just how it be in a darn classroom. So the Trail of Tears was an ethnic cleansing that forced and displaced approximately 60,000 people of the five civilized tribes. And I hate that they say that, civilized tribe. The tribes that y'all forced to follow y'all traditions, to learn y'all language, that were submissive. That's what you call civilized. They were civilized before you met them. If you ask me, barbaric, uncivilized is when you come and take what's not yours. When you kill, steal, rape, and whatever to be successful. And don't try to change your... And print your history for everybody to know. And don't give a darn. That's barbaric. Because this history should be burned. I wouldn't want anyone to know this history. I would be so ashamed and embarrassed and doing everything I can to right this wrong. But they'd be so proud with their heritage and their flags and stuff. You're proud of that? There's different creators in this world. I hope y'all know. And I feel like you are a seed of your creator. And I just know my creator is different because I'm built different. Of course, you can fight and kill when you need to, but you don't just wake up and I'm going to conquer. Da, 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 da. It's just you're not bred like that. But somebody's creator is. Anyways, Let's see. As a part of the Indian removal, members of the Cherokee, Muscogee, Creek, Seminole, Chickasaw, Choctaw nations were forcibly removed from their ancestral homelands in the southeastern United States to the newly designed Indian Territory west of the Mississippi River after the passage of the Indian Removal Act in 1830. The Cherokee Removal Act in 1838, 8 years, y'all. The last forced removal east of Mississippi was brought on by the discovery of gold near Georgia, resulting in the Georgia Gold Rush. So again, raping the lands of its natural resources from its natural people. When you really look in history, like Egyptians and stuff, weren't they always adorned with gold? Because it was probably like apples falling off a goddamn tree. We're not going to be fighting over a resource that is accessible, that is at our fingertips any day. If trees drop diamonds down, do you think diamonds will be worth what they're worth? No, because it would be like a nut. A dime a dozen. These people were adorned in gold and silver and bronze and crystals and rubies. That was nothing to them. It was a surplus of it. So if that's natural to you, you telling on yourself when you come steal, kill, destroy to get something. That means it's new to you. Wherever you come from, it didn't exist. And you're trying to make it yours. You're telling on yourself. You're telling on yourself. If this was your homeland, then you will be used to that stuff too. Oh my God. Anyways. So the relocated Native American people, Native Americans suffered from exposure to disease and starvation while en route to their newly designated Indian Reserve. Thousands died from diseases before reaching their destinations or shortly after. Some historians have said that the event constituted a genocide, and did. Although this label has been rejected, I bet it is. They always reject the truth by others and remains a matter of debate. There is no debate. The facts speak for themselves. You come over here, you expose them to new disease. How do you starve farmers and the land is so bountiful and they taught you how to farm? How does that even happen? And you forced them to leave. They didn't starve. You moved them from their farms where there's food and areas that they knew how to grow food and sent them what? How many miles? We're going to get to it. This just angers me. They would have been better off hiding this history, never to be known. Because it just does nothing but anger me. Oh, it just puts so much anger in me. The process of cultural transformation was the traditional way of life towards a white American way. If that don't say KKK, I don't know what else does. A life as proposed by George Washington and Henry Knox. Ciao. American settlers pressured the federal government to remove the Indians. How you bring your ass somewhere and force the government to do something that a government shouldn't even be able to do? Number one, you aren't the government on foreign lands. The natives should have been the ones implementing laws. This shit's so ass backward. So it's saying the Chickasaw was the first nation to be removed. After two wars, the Seminoles were removed. The Creek removal was followed in 1834. The Chickasaw in 1837. And lastly, the Cherokee in 1838. That's my tribe. Period. My grandma didn't even have to tell me that. She a fighter. All we know is fighters. Instead of fighting for the wrong thing, fight for right things. Some managed to invade the removals, however, they remain in ancestral homelands. So our people were from Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida, and North Carolina. That's where our native culture is from. And I'm sure it was so many tribes all over these united stolen states. And then after they want to throw Africans in there. Oh, yeah, because we was trading with each other. We had a whole system set up peacefully before they came in and wreaked havoc. It says a small number of Indians who live with nations, including over 4,000 slaves and others of African descent, such as the spouses of freedmen, also accompanied the Indians on their trek westward. In 1837, 46,000 Indians from the southern states had been removed from their homelands, opening up 25 million acres for white settlement. So this is Jackson's role. Although Jackson was not the sole or original architect of the removal policy, his contributions were influential in its trajectory. Jackson's support for the removal of the Indians began at least a decade before his presidency. Indian removal was Jackson's top legislative priority upon taking office. And to be honest, he probably didn't even give a darn about them darn Indians. But since his mind was so set on being president, by any means necessary. If these people care about these Indians moving so much, that's what I'm going to shoot for. That's what they're going to vote for. And I'm being there. And God darn it, he did it. He definitely did it. What the people, he gave the people what they wanted. That's not a great leader to me. You don't just give the people what they want. Sometimes the people wrong as hell and they need to be corrected. Let me keep going. The forced relocations and ethnic cleansing of the Indian nations have sometimes been referred to as death marches, in particular when referring to the Cherokee marches across the Midwest in 1838, which occurred via a predominantly land route. I saw this map, y'all, and it was ridiculous. Instead of them walking from east to west, they made them go north and then come back down. So they were heading into mountains and snow just to come back down. Wonder why? Because some states didn't want them walking through their states and bringing diseases. You brought the goddamn diseases here. The largest death toll for the Cherokee forced relocation come from the period after May 23rd, 1838 deadline. This was the point when the remaining Cherokee was rounded up into camps and placed into large groups, often over 700 in size, larger than the population of the Little Rock or Memphis at the time. Communicable diseases spread quickly through these closely quartered groups, killing them. These groups were among the last to move, but following the same route that the others had taken. The areas that were going through had been depleted of supplies due to the vast number that had gone before them. The marches were subject to extortion and violence along the route. In addition, these final contingents were forced to set out during the hottest and coldest months of the year, killing many. That's the devil. Exposure to the elements, disease, starvation, harassment by local fortsmen, and insufficient rations similarly killed up to one-third of the Chickasaw and other nations on their march. There exists some debate among historians and the affected nations as to whether the term Trail of Tears should be used to refer to the entire history of forced relocation from the eastern United States into the Indian Territory, to the relocations of specified the five civilized tribes to the route of the march, or specifically marches in which the remaining holdouts from each area were rounded up. It is what it is. Don't try to beautify. There has been debate among scholars about whether any removal and the Trails of Tears was genocide acts. This is what really pissed me off, y'all. Historian Jeffrey Ulster argues that even when genocide was not unequivocally carried out, the threat of genocide was used to ensure Native's compliance with the removal policies, and concludes that in its outcome and in the means used to gain compliance, the policy had genocidal dimensions. Patrick Wolf argues that settler colonialism and genocide are interrelated but should be distinguished from each other, writing that settler colonialism is more than the summary liquidation of indigenous people, though it indicated that Wolf describes the assimilation of dissident people who escape relocation and partly their abandonment of as a collectively as a form of culture genocide. Though he emphasizes the culture genocide is the real thing, it is that it resulted in a large number of deaths. Thank you. Let's focus on what it really was. The Trail of Tears was thus a settler colonial replacement of indigenous people and culture in addition to a genocidal mass killing, according to Wolf. Hold on. So Roxanne Dubar describes the policy as genocide, quoting Cherokee Principal Chief Wilma Mankiller. I love that. I'll take that last name. The fledging United States government method of dealing with Native American people, a process which they include systematic genocide, property theft, and total subjugation, reached its nadir in 1830 under federal policy of President Andrew Jackson. Mankiller emphasized that Jackson's policies were the natural extinction of earlier policies of the Jefferson administration during territorial expansion that she considers genocidal. So you know what that proves to me? They tried this shit before and it didn't work. He picked back up where he left off to push it through. She remembers. She remembers. So this is what really pissed me off. Colonial historian Daniel Blake Smith disagrees with the usage of the term genocide. I bet Smith tells me everything I need to know. No one wanted, let alone plan for the Cherokee to die in forced removal of the West. How sway when they didn't have proper guidance. Y'all wouldn't let them go through certain towns. Y'all let them freeze. It wasn't enough resources. It's a genocide. You know, let's start here. It became a genocide when you came to a land that you know that wasn't yours, lied and being sneaky and in with trickery befriended these people. They taught you how to build forts and how to farm and get food. You probably intermingled and married with their people. All along, you went back to your kingdom and told them we can take over these people. Came back with boats and armies and took the land. Got money for the land. How do you get money for something that's not yours? Please explain. Got money for something that's not yours. Pushed them away. And then you don't want blood on your hands. So you don't want to call it a genocide. It is what it is. God knows. And that's why I'm okay with karma. Because whatever you do, baby, you will reap. So when they say we ain't reincarnate, whoever, you know, generations was involved with this, baby, may you come back time and time again and never leave this fucking realm. Like, if that ain't insanity, I don't know what is. Because I don't think you'll ever be able to repay that debt, period. So let me see what he say. He disagrees. Although the Trail of Tears was tragic, it does not quite meet the standard of genocide. And to the extent to which tribes were allowed to retain their identity, albeit by removal, does not quite meet the standard of genocide. Okay, so he has a small point there. Although they were forced to move, they still had their native tongue. They still, you know, could take berries and seeds with them. You know, they still kind of have their history. I agree with them because today, Native Americans still do their powwows. You know, they still do their feathers and their costumes. They still speak their native tongue. But let's look at African Americans. How many American African Americans do you know speak any of the African languages? We are just now learning who the gods are, who the Yoruba are. We are just now deciding to rename ourselves. We are just now getting back in tune with our kinsmen who, if you go over there, they don't want anything to do with us. So we are even fighting amongst ourselves when we are already each other. But I still would say they both genocide. They both were done unjustly by the same group of people. Let's focus on that. Okay, so let's see. Someone else said, Sean Wilkes said the Jackson democracy was a autonomous transition from the ethical community upheld by anthropomorphic men. Turns tragedy into melodrama, exaggerated parts at the expense of the whole, and sacrifice a nuisance for sharpness. Jackson's policy of the Native American was based on good intentions and was far from genocide. Get the f- I wonder if everything that has ever been done to all other races by this one party was done to them, how would they feel? Seriously, would they have even survived? Jackson's policy on Native Americans. He argues it's difficult to find evidence of conscious desire for genocide in Jackson's policy on a Native American, but it dismisses the idea that Jackson was motivated by the welfare of Native Americans. I don't even want to read anymore because that just disturbs me. But it just lets me know there's different human beings on Earth, because one group of people think it's okay to just take land, uproot people, make them move, and, oh, let's not use words like genocide. You know, that's heartless. And another group of people are like, oh, my God, you know, why don't you understand? You know, yeah, two different species. You know, if ands or buts about it. Okay. So now we're going to look into Manuel. Manuel D. Montino. Manuel Joaquin D. Montino was a Spanish general and colonial administrator who served as royal governor of La Florida during Florida's first Spanish period, and as a royal governor of Panama, he defended Florida from an attack by British forces in 1740 and launched his own unsuccessful invasion of Georgia during the War of Jerkins Ear. Let me tell you why I liked him. Hold on. I must have skipped over it. Let me go back up. Okay, here we go. I skipped over it. My bad. On April 29, 1737, Montano was named governor of La Florida. So not only do I get Native American history, I get Spanish history. La Florida, we all know Spanish people say la. So shortly after his taking of office, he wrote to the governor of Cuba, notifying him of a forthcoming British invasion and requested supplies to ward off the danger. On March 15, 1738, Governor Montano established Fort Garcia Real de Santa Teresa de Mose as a fortified town for blacks who had escaped enslavement in the Carolina colony, to whom Montano granted citizenship and freedom in return for their serving in the military and professing belief in the true faith, Roman Catholicism. Now, that's why I draw a line. You don't force nobody religion. But not only did he grant them citizenship but freedom, but what did he have to do? Risk their life. Who else did that? The Americans. Them slaves joined that during war, thinking that they would be free. A lot of them died. And how are you fighting? I would never sign up to fight alongside these people that hate. Now, I want to see a movie about that. I want to see a movie about slaves that joined the war alongside these KKK members that couldn't stand them. Did they get food? Did they get medical support? If they both were fighting side by side and both got blown up, did they save one and let the other one die? Like, I literally want, let me see that. Let me see that. Let me read a book like that. Because we don't get that history. Because they definitely risked their life alongside these men. Probably saved them. Because we all know African American are strong. So strong. It's the DNA, baby. And powerful. You mix strength and spirit. Gosh. That's like two forces in one. But anyways. It became the first free black settlement legally sanctioned in North America, as well as a haven for fugitive slaves from the colonies of the North and South Carolina. Here, the free men would cultivate the ground and learn the Catholic faith. However, following the murder of some inhabitants at the fort by Indian allies, so again, this lets me know there's free slaves. There's the British that are coming over trying to fight. There's the Spanish. Okay, so I'll continue with Manuel. So here the free men will cultivate the ground, learn the Catholic faith. However, following the murder of some inhabitants of the fort by Indian allies of the British, Montano ordered it abandoned and its inhabitants resettled in St. Augustine. And I sent that to my best friend because something is calling her to St. Augustine a lot. And when I go there, I get an eerie feeling. It's an eerie feeling that I get with St. Augustine. But apparently, they couldn't win against the British, so they resettled. But I'm going to remember this name forever, Mr. Manuel. Because let me just restate this again. In March 15, 1738, Governor Montano established Fort Garcia, Real de Santos Terra de Mos, as a fortified town for free blacks who had escaped enslavement. The first. Okay. Let me see if there's anything else here worth mentioning. I think that's about it. Yeah, so that's it for him. So then I went to Free Negro. In the British colonies in North America and the United States, before the abolition of slavery in 1865, Free Negro or Free Black described the legal status of African Americans who were not enslaved. The term was applied both to formerly enslaved people that were freedmen and to those who had been born free people of color. In South Africa, during the period 1652 to 1840, a free black was a person of color who had been emancipated. The term was exclusively for free black slaves. A colored people could only either be free black or free booger, free born citizen slave, or free born people that were natives. In the case of Australia, both free blacks and enslaved could be transported there to serve penal terms. The term free black encompassed women in this context. In the Netherlands in the 17th century, free black men usually married white women, and there were no restrictions on interracial marriage. They may have been victims of stereotyping and other discrimination in the 17th century. So when did they make it so bad? Slavery was legal in practice in every European colony in North America. At various points in history, not all Americans who came to America were slaves. A few came even in the 17th century as freemen, as sailors working on ships. In the early colonial years, some Africans came as indentured servants who were freed after a set period of years, and did many of the immigrants from Europe. Such servants became free when they completed their term of indenture. They were also eligible for head rights for lands in the new colony and Chesapeake Bay region, where indentured service were more common. As early as 1678, a class of free black people existed in North America. Various groups contributed to the growth of free black Negro population. Children born to free black women, mulatto children born to white indentured or free women, mixed race children born to free Native American free slaves, slaves who escaped from their enslavers. As described above, descendants of free blacks who were never enslaved. This goes to show me, though. You got black with white, black with Native American. Our DNA is everywhere, you guys. this is what I was talking about. Beginning with the 1775 proclamation of Lord Dunmore, governor of Virginia, the British recruited slaves of American revolutionaries to their armed forces and promised them freedom in return. Tens of thousands of slaves escaped from plantations or from other vineyards during the war, especially in the South. Some joined British lines or disappeared in the disruption of war. After the war, when the British evacuated New York in November 1783, they transported more than 3,000 black loyalists and thousands of other American loyalists to resettle in Nova Scotia and in what became Upper Canada. Y'all, we everywhere. And a total of more than 29,000 loyal refugees eventually departed from New York alone. The British evacuated thousands of other slaves when they left southern ports, resettling many in the Caribbean and others in England. This is why we're everywhere, y'all. I mentioned St. Augustine. This was interesting. Let me scroll back up. In 1840, the territory's population had reached 54,477 people. Half the population were enslaved Africans. I'm going to start with that. In 1963, nearly a decade after the Supreme Court ruling Brown versus Board of Education, that segregation of schools was unconstitutional, African Americans were still trying to get St. Augustine to integrate the public schools in the city. They were also trying to integrate public accommodations such as lunch counters and were met with arrests and the Ku Klux Klan violence. Local college students held nonviolent protests throughout the city, including sit-ins at the local Woolworths, picket lines, and marches through downtown. These protests were often met with police violence. Homes of African Americans were firebombed. Black leaders were assaulted and threatened with death, and others were fired from their jobs. In the spring of 1964, St. Augustine City Rights leader Robert Hayling asked the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, and its leader, Martin Luther King Jr., for assistance. From May until July 1964, King and Hayling, along with Andrew Young, organized marches, sit-ins, and other forms of peaceful protest in St. Augustine. I did not know that, y'all. I did not know that. Hundreds of black and white civil rights supporters were arrested, and the jails were filled to capacity. At the request of Hayling and King, white civil rights supporters from the North, including students, clergy, and well-known public figures, came to St. Augustine and were arrested together with Southern activists. St. Augustine was the only place in Florida where King was arrested. His arrest there occurred on June 11, 1964, on the steps of the Monson Motor Lodge restaurant. Lodge told me everything I need to know about that. The demonstration came to a climax when a group of black and white protesters jumped into the hotel's segregated swimming pool. Check this out, y'all. In response to the protest, James Brock, not that we know his name, the manager of the hotel and the president of the Florida Hotel and Motel Association, poured what he claimed to be butyric acid into the pool to burn the protesters. Photographs of this and of the policeman jumping in the pool to arrest the protesters were broadcast around the world. The Ku Klux Klan responded to the protests with violence attacks that were widely reported in national and international media. Popular revulsion against the Klan and the police violence in St. Augustine generally generated national sympathy for black protesters and became a key factor in the congressional passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, leading eventually to the passage of Voting Rights Acts of 1965, both of which provided federal enforcement of constitutional rights. Now, I'm okay with this. Let them go to school together. I'm okay with this. Let them vote. Okay, let them be equal. But no one decided, let's go back a little bit further. Who does this land really belong to? Let's go back a little further. Let's give the natives justice. Let's go back a little bit further. You know what I mean? Let's find these unmarked graves and stuff and restore what was here before. We just forget all of that and want to start here and make things right. No. Keep going back and keep making it right. That's my problem with the law. because that would take all this land and stuff away. If you start from the beginning, it would strip them of everything that they have. So all this little stuff that they want to approve, it's nothing compared to what it really could do. In 1965, St. Augustine celebrated the 400th anniversary of its founding. How can you even celebrate that you found? Do you see this? They put they found it. You didn't find shit. It was already here. People were already here and living here. Who? Okay, what was St. Augustine's real name? That's what I want to learn. What was St. Augustine's real name? Were there chief leaders? And I heard the women were a lot of the chiefs. What was their name? What was culture like? What was schooling like? What was everything like before his story? Talk about 400th anniversary. It goes back further than that. We don't want to know y'all history of founding something. Like, I will not be teaching my children this. How do you find something? Absolutely not. You just found a house and picked up the keys and moved in? Absolutely not. The Historic St. Augustine Preservation Board was formed to reconstruct more than 36 buildings to the historic appearance, which was completed within a few years. I don't think I even care anymore. I will talk forever and ever and ever. So that completes part two. We're going to come back for one more last name at Jackson, part three. I only got about three more websites to go over. Talk to y'all later. Bye. But ciao, Earth is ghetto. I'm trying to make this my last reincarnation here. So namaste, levaste, always a vibe. Hi, babe. Thanks a million for listening. I hope you have a better than great day. I love you. Talk to you later. Mwah. Bye.